Ask Your Launchpad for Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud On Out podcast. My name is Andreas.
And my name is Michael.
And we are two brothers, and we focus 100% on Amazon Web Services. In this podcast, every other week, one of us prepares a topic that is not known to the other one. And this week, it's Michael's turn. So Michael, what do you have in mind for us today?
Andreas, so this week we talk about a way to figure out the best compute option on AWS for your project. So when you start using AWS, most of us start migrating an existing application to AWS. And the first choice that you have to make after you decided for AWS is, where do you run your application on? And basically the options are EC2, Fargate, and Lambda. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. And we're also going to talk about what questions you should ask yourself to figure out what the best option is that fits your project. Before we start, we have an important announcement to make. We recently joined the GitHub Sponsors program, which means that you can now support our open source work by becoming a sponsor. So how does this work? If you use one of our open source projects, and examples are our CloudFormation templates, or our virus scan solution, or our EC2 SSH access, you are now able, just by using GitHub, to become a sponsor of our project. We are very happy to have our first sponsor on board. Thank you very much, Alex. And now back to the podcast, Andreas.
Okay, so this week's episode is all about choosing the best fitting compute option on AWS.
Yeah, that's correct. Let's get started. And before we really dive into the decision, I want to just give you a very short introduction of the different options. So the first option, and that's the most obvious choice, is using EC2 virtual machines. So with EC2, you can run Windows and Linux workloads. You can get really big machines. So I looked up the latest specs. It's amazing. So you can get 448 cores and up to 26 terabyte of memories and 100 gigabits network. And you can get things like GPUs. So there's a lot of resources available if you need them. And also EC2 is built per second on Linux. So it's really flexible in terms of spinning up and spinning down resources. And EC2 is really around for quite some time. So it is a service where you very likely will not find a lot of missing pieces. So there are a lot of features already. Because of that, in my opinion, that's the most mature option. And you can always fall back to that. The second option that we are going to consider today is Fargate. And Fargate is a way to run Docker containers on AWS directly. There is no need to install, configure, or patch a cluster. It's all managed by AWS. And it really feels like an EC2 instance. The only difference is that it's not a virtual machine, it's a container. The downsides here are that the maximum resources that you can get are 4 cores and 30 gigabytes of memory. You also have flexible per second billing compared to the same that you get with EC2. And in my opinion, that's the easiest way to run Docker containers on AWS. And we talked a lot about Fargate in the past. If you are interested in that, then check out the previous episodes. So last but not least, there is another option, and this is one of the newer kits on the block. It's called Lambda or serverless. And it's an evolving technology, which means it's not yet mature. So there are not all the cases covered. So you will run into situations where it feels a little bit unfinished. But basically how it works is you upload your source code and AWS runs it for you. So you really only care about your code. You have nothing to do with the environment anymore. So not even the Docker image needs to be provided by you. That's the most convenient way to execute code on AWS. The convenience comes with limitations, of course. So you have to follow an event-driven programming paradigm if you use Lambda. You can not run an execution longer than 15 minutes. So within 15 minutes, you have to finish the computational task. And also the number of supported programming languages is limited. So lots of limitations, but a lot of convenience. That's kind of the summary here. So problem with this is we have now so many choices. So what is the best choice in a specific situation? And that's why I created a decision tree. And the decision tree basically is a bunch of questions. And depending on your answers to those questions, you will either come to the conclusion that Lambda is the best choice, that Fargate is the best choice, or that EC2 is the best choice. And what we're going to do today here in this podcast is we basically walk through the decision tree, discuss the question, also discuss like the background, why are these questions asked. And you can download the decision tree if you go to the show notes, and there you will find the link to the blog post that comes with this episode. And there you will find all the information that you need to get the decision tree. So if you want to use this for your projects and look it up, then there is a PDF waiting for you. Okay, Andreas, any questions or can we start?
No, that sounds fantastic. So, Michael, let's get started with the decision tree.
Okay. So maybe something that I have to mention here is that all those questions and decisions, and also those are the questions that I think are most important, are all collected based on what we see when we work in projects with our clients. So, I mean, there are a potential very, very long list of questions that you could ask, but the questions that I will ask now or in the next minutes are the most important ones. The most important question, in my opinion, is the project a lift and shift project or is it a greenfield project? Depending on the answer here, you will be limited in your choices. And so as a like rule of thumb is that if it's a lift and shift project, you are more likely running into the EC2 and Fargate direction. And while if it's a greenfield project, then you are more likely to be able to use Lambda or Fargate.
Okay, so this is most likely because when we're doing a lift and shift project, we're probably spinning up a legacy application on AWS that is maybe 10 or hopefully not even 20 years old. And so it's unlikely that this application fits into the limitations and also concepts that Lambda or maybe even Fargate are bringing with them.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case, Andreas. Okay, so what's the next question that you can ask yourself if it's a lift and shift project? The next question is if it's a Windows-only project. So does the application only runs on Windows? And if this is the case, then the decision is made. You have to run it on EC2. So there's no other option left. So that's the easy decision. But if it's an application that could also run on Linux, and if we like work with enterprises and there are like many applications that are Java-based, so very likely it can also run on Linux. The question is not only does it run on Linux, the question is also is it like supported by the vendor to run on Linux. But if this is the case, so if it's not Windows only, then we have to look into other questions, and now it gets a little bit more technical. The next question that I ask our customers is, does the application store state outside of an external database? So this could be a file system, or if it's more like modern, could also be a shared memory kind of thing, like Hazelcast. And if this is the case, so if the data is also stored somewhere else than in a database, then in almost all cases, it's a good idea to run it on EC2 because EC2 is a more stable platform, and Fargate assumes that your containers are stateless. So that's not a good fit if you have state in the containers.
Okay, so basically the question here is the application or is my server basically, is it stateless or not? So does the EC2 instance or the Fargate container need to store any information on local disks? So local means either EBS volumes or instance storage. And if that's the case, and you need to somehow store data on disk or persist data on the machine, then basically your only option is EC2 instances. And by the way, what is maybe important to mention here, your only option is EC2 instances, And also, in that case, you cannot really make leverage all the feature set that EC2 comes with. So you cannot do auto-scaling groups among multiple availability zones, stuff like that, because then you probably rely on a single EC2 instance, which is in general not the best pattern on AWS, but for many legacy applications and lift and shift projects, it's sometimes the only possibility, actually.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So that's not the level of detail that I cover in the decision tree, but that's also like an interesting question. So if you decide on EC2, then do you want to run it in a high availability manner? Do you want to run it in an autoscale manner? So that's also interesting questions. And if it's a stateful application, as we call it, you will run into issues with those concepts, like the more cloud native concepts. Okay, Andreas. So the next question I ask, and this is because of how enterprise applications sometimes are architected. The question is, does the application come with its own cluster management mechanism? So sometimes the application servers that are used have their own kind of cluster management. They discover each other with different mechanisms. If you're in really bad situations, they use multicast, but also maybe based on IP, and then they talk to each other and form a cluster, like a software cluster. And if this is the case, then they usually rely on fixed IP addresses and things like this. And then the choice is also kind of made, because then you are limited to run it on EC2. The next question is about the resources that are used. So if you need more than, or if the application needs more than 30 gigabytes of memory, or 4 cores, or 1 gigabit network connection, or if you need something like GPUs, then you also have to use EC2, because you don't get more than 30 gigabytes of memory or more than 4 cores on Fargate. And also the network resources are pretty limited on Fargate, so you will not see 10 gigabits or more than that. So it's 1 gigabit on average, so it's not really documented, the network capabilities. And there is some measurements out there in the open that people created, but if you have really high network requirements, then Fargate is very likely not the choice for you. So I would recommend using EC2 in this case. Okay, and so last but not least, the last question basically in this branch of the decision tree. Do you expect more than 1,000 users using the application at the same time? So parallel users or concurrent users, however you call it. And if this is the case, then this kind of implies that you probably should run on EC2. This also kind of is related to the network requirements, because if you have 1,000 users in parallel, you will also generate some traffic on the machines. So usually then you are better off using EC2.
Is it also because a high number of parallel users, or maybe to phrase it other, is a high number of requests that are coming in per second, also from a price perspective, makes EC2 a much better option, because the additional charge that we pay for Fargate and Lambda then gets maybe significant compared to EC2? Is it also because of that?
Yeah, so that's correct. So at some point in time, and the question is if it's really 1,000 users or if it's more or less, that really also depends on the application and how resource hungry it is. But at some point in time, it gets cheaper to manage EC2 on your own, because the premium for Fargate gets so high that you can afford to have someone take care of that. Okay, Andreas. So that's kind of the EC2 branch of the decision tree. So if it's Windows only, or if it has external, if it has some kind of state, the application that's not stored in a database, if it comes with a magic cluster mechanism that the application brings with that relies on stuff like fixed IP addresses, or if it's really resource hungry, then very likely EC2 is the best choice for you. So let's look into the other direction. So if it's a greenfield project, and I think the next important question to ask here is, do you build the application yourself? So do you have some kind of software development in-house, or maybe also you have external software developers? or do you buy an existing solution? So if you buy an existing solution, then you're more or less in the same branch than compared to the lift and shift question. So you have to ask your vendor the same question. Does it run on Windows only? What about state? What about cluster management mechanisms and so on and so forth? So that's kind of more or less the same thing. If you buy something off the shelf, chances that it is cloud native are really low. So that's at least what we see when we work with clients that buy software. So usually this is really software that also has been on the market for quite some time.
Yeah, I can maybe add one example here, maybe one outlier to this rule. I was involved in a lift and shift project where the application was Oracle Apex. So this is you can call it a web framework that Oracle is offering for their Oracle database. And the funny thing here is it was a lift and shift project. It was a software that you can buy off the shelf basically and then do some development on top of that. But it fits into a Fargate container because all the state is stored in the Oracle database. You have a stateless server here. And also you don't have that crazy CPU or memory consumption here. So yeah, it's possible to run Oracle Apex on Fargate. So there are, of course, also outliers to that rule. But I agree in general. A lift and shift project, or also if you buy software from the shelf, it's more likely that you end up with EC2 than with Fargate and Lambda.
Okay, so when you come to the conclusion that this is going to be an in-house development project, so I think the next question that you should ask yourself or also your team is, if your team is using opinionated frameworks, so for example, Ruby on Rails, Spring for Java, or the whole Java EE world, also Django and for Python devs and Laravel for PHP developers, and if they're using such a framework, the next question that I would ask them is if your team is risk averse when using new technologies. And if they are risk averse when using new technologies, and if they are comfortable within a framework that provides a lot of opinion and a lot of guidance how to solve a certain problem, then this kind of leads into the same question that goes into the Fargate direction. And basically the last question that could prevent you from using Fargate is that you are running outside the resource constraints, so more than 30 gigs of memory, more than 4 cores and so on and so forth, or that you build an application that is really used by lots of users in parallel. But if you fit into the 30 gigs of memory and the number of concurrent users is not higher than 1,000, then this is a perfect fit for Fargate. Because you can, from the beginning, use this or keep this limitation in mind with 30 gigabytes of memory. You can keep the limitation in mind that you should store all the state in the database. So basically, you can follow all the best practices, but you can stay within your framework, where the people usually are most productive. So if you use your framework for 5 or 10 years, then you can really solve problems in a very short time by just using how it is done in your framework. Okay, so what is if your developers are not using one of those frameworks, or if they are more interested in checking out new technologies? So we sometimes also say that if it's kind of part of the compensation that you provide people some playground to fiddle around with new technologies. That's in many cases a big piece of the motivation for software developers in some companies that is definitely part of the compensation. So your salary is a little bit lower, but you can play with the new stuff. Compared to if you work in a large enterprise, you probably have to use more the old-fashioned technologies, then your salary is a little bit higher, but you probably are not able to check out every new technology that comes around. Okay, so if this is the case, so you have software devs that are interested in new technologies, then the next question that I would ask myself is, if you can think of any heavy computational task in this new application that is hard to split into chunks. And the reason why I ask this question is because if we try to run this on Lambda, we always have this runtime execution timeout. So we cannot run a computation for longer than 15 minutes. And I give you a few examples where this is a problem. So for example, if you have to download a single file, and this file is rather big, like maybe it's 50 gigabytes or even bigger, then it could be possible, and it's not possible to split this up because the file is 50 gigabytes and the source where you download the file, you cannot change the source. So you have to download this file and you have to process it in one shot. And so this is not a task that you can split up into pieces. And also if you run simulations that don't have a feature that is called checkpointing, so basically we can store or save the state and then run from this state in another execution. So those are all indicators that you cannot split the computational tasks into smaller chunks.
Yeah, I want to add something here. So one is, I think you asked the question, is it possible to split my computational task in smaller chunks? The other question is maybe also, is it hard to do so? Because if it's a lot of work to do so, it might also not be worth the trade-off here. So that is maybe important here. It's not only, I think it's maybe impossible to split any task into smaller chunks, but the complexity that you add or the effort that you create is probably quite high in some situations. And I want to add another story here. So I'd like to tell that story for years. So we built a data pipeline with help of Lambda functions a few years ago. So we considered this requirement. So the function has to execute within 15 minutes as it was a few years ago, it was 5 minutes then. And then we decided, okay, yeah, it's fine. We are able to process and compute everything within 5 minutes, no problem. And then the pipeline went to production. It was working very well for a month. But then something changed. So basically we were analyzing website traffic. And the traffic for the website increased very heavily because of external reasons. And this caused much larger files to download and to process in the data pipeline with Lambda. And now we were no longer able to do so within the 15-minute or 5-minute boundary. This was then the showstopper for Lambda function. So one thing that is important here is you have to be quite sure that the 15-minute runtime execution limit is something you can work with even in the worst case. Yeah, that is important here. It doesn't have to work in the best case or in average cases, but really in the worst case that you can think of.
Yeah, so that's a good point. And I can also remember this problem, and basically we migrated this part to EC2, and then we had all the time that we need to compute it. So that's always the fallback. Okay, so if you figure out that you cannot split it, the tasks, or it's too complicated, or you cannot really guarantee that it will finish within 15 minutes, then you are more or less in the same branch than before. Now the question is, can you use Fargate? So are the resource requirements a good fit? So 30 gigs of memory, 4 cores, and so on and so forth. And basically you can now use the same branch and decide if you can use Fargate or if you have to fall back completely to EC2. But if you think that none of your computational tasks will be as expensive as they cannot fit within 50 minutes, then the next question that I would ask myself is, do we expect more than 100 users in parallel? And if you expect less than this, then Lambda is definitely the best fit here. And if you expect more than that, then I would start arguing that it might be more efficient to look into the other direction. So look into Fargate, the Fargate direction, and if it's even more than 1,000 users in parallel, then I would go back to EC2. Just because the amount or the premium that you pay for all this management gets significant, and you might be better off using something else. Okay, so that's it, Andreas. I think that's the end of the decision tree.
Yes, I agree with your last point that you said, but I think there's one other thing to consider here, because you said, if you have a lot of concurrent requests, you should think about using EC2. That's fine, but I think the other requirement that you have then is you have to, then there needs to be someone needs to take care of all that. So you need to have stuff or externals that actually take care of managing the EC2 instances and operate them, because that's basically what you get when using Fargate or Lambda, that AWS is doing that for you. So I think that is then important. You need the expertise and also the manpower to do so.
Yeah, that's right. And it, like, all the decisions, or most of the decisions that I presented, are kind of, they are not like 100% decisions. So they are no like an indicator for a direction. I mean, there are some really clear decisions, so like the Windows or Linux question, or also the memory constraints. But the other questions are, as always, they cannot be answered with yes and no, like binary decisions. So they are, you can also be somewhere in between. And then I would just go into this direction that makes sense for you, taking the previous questions into account. So, for example, if your team is not really looking into using new technologies, and you are kind of, the question is, should you use Fargate or Lambda, then I would always go into direction of Fargate, because if the people are not interested in using it, why should you? And this is kind of the whole idea here.
Yeah, so I totally agree. So I think the decision tree helps a lot to get a direction and to maybe also ask the right questions to come to a decision here. So definitely check out the PDF that Michael has created. So one more question from my side, Michael. So you talked about the different options, EC2, Fargate, and Lambda. Maybe to sum up this discussion, maybe can we discuss a little bit the advantages or also the differences between those three options. So why is Lambda such an important service? Why is it maybe a very good choice for your application? What about Fargate and what about EC2? So maybe we can discuss that a little bit, maybe some examples as well.
Maybe we start with Lambda. So with Lambda, you have lots of issues are solved for you. So for example, the deployment is solved. You don't have to do any patching. You don't have to do any auto-scaling, and all those problems are solved. So you upload your application basically in terms of a source code bundle, and then it runs on AWS Lambda, keeping in mind all the limitations that come with that. And you also have to follow the event-driven approach. So you cannot spin up a process and listen on a port, for example. So you have to include Lambda functions into the serverless ecosystem, which means you need something that triggers your function. So, for example, you can have an HTTP API gateway. You might have a GraphQL endpoint. And if this is hit by a request, then your Lambda function is triggered, and then the code executes. So the big benefit here is that you really have most of the operational tasks are completely covered by the Lambda service. So there is no need for rolling updates or things like this. So that's really the option where you have not many choices, and this is good and bad at the same time. So as always, the limitations help you to solve a problem, but they also limit you in the ways you can do.
Yeah, I think what is important to mention as well for Lambda is, I think I see really big benefits for applications that are very valuable to a company. But only a few people use them. So there are many of these applications out there. We might have maybe 100 people that are using that application, but they create a lot of value by doing so. And I think in that case, having an application running on Lambda and with serverless is very interesting because of the pay-per-use model here, because we're really paying for each and every incoming request. And typically these applications have long times where they are just idling around waiting for new requests. And yeah, in that case, it's very, very good approach to have that on serverless, because basically you pay nothing for the compute infrastructure here. That is what I see in the real world, a very good use case for Lambda functions.
Yeah, that's true. And you also have to consider that we are talking about like the application use case here. So it's really an application that serves users and not like some other stuff like data pipelines and things like this. So then the situation might change as well. But like to host an application, that's really a different kind of perspective. And I also agree with what you said. If the application is not used heavily by many users in concurrently, then the pricing benefits of Lambda are really interesting. If you are fine with all the restrictions and develop like very specifically for this kind of paradigm.
Yeah, and for me, the biggest benefit of Fargate is actually that it makes it so easy to deploy containers on AWS. Because if you have decided that containers are a good idea for you, so probably you just develop software in-house, and then using containers is really powerful because you can run them on your local machines, deploy them to AWS or any other cloud provider. And I think in that case, Fargate is really, really interesting because you don't have any additional work to do. So basically, the image, the Docker image that you create is the thing that you can directly deploy to AWS with the help of Fargate. And I think this is a game changer as well because, it actually works like an EC2 instance, but you can use Docker images that are much easier to create in your deployment pipeline on your local machines and so on.
Maybe we also have to mention that you can use Fargate in two different like ways. You can use it in the like ECS kind of way. So that's the container service of AWS. And this is where it feels really like an EC2 instance with all the concepts of security groups, IAM roles and everything. And you can also use it if you're more like familiar with using the Kubernetes API for doing deployments. You can also use Fargate using that approach. So that's also basically the next decision that you can make. If you settle on Fargate, you can decide what API do you want to use to interact with this Fargate thing. So you can use the ECS API, or you can use the Fargate API. Or you can use the Kubernetes API using EKS.
One important thing to mention here is that I don't know why, but it took AWS more than a year to deliver Fargate for AKS after they announced it. And now they finally released it to the public, but it's only available in 4 regions. So I don't know really what's going on there. It doesn't seem to be their first priority at the moment. Don't know why, but that's a little bit frustrating.
Okay, yeah. So that's something that you have to consider. Yeah, if you choose a service, you also have to check the region availability. And as always, like EC2, most mature option, you will find less problems in the EC2 ecosystem than you find in the Fargate on Lambda ecosystem, because they are not as mature as EC2. So let's talk about EC2 next, Andreas. So in my opinion, the biggest benefits here is that it is very mature, so there's lots of tooling available. There are lots of proven architectures that we can use. And with the topic in mind that we talked about in the last episode, in the one before that, using EC2 in a mutable or immutable approach, you can also like treat this in 2 different ways. And the one way is to basically deploy Amazon machine images, which is like similar to what you can do with Docker images, but a little bit more heavyweight. Or you can really spin up the EC2 instance and then log into this machine and do whatever you like using SSH or RDP. So you are very flexible here, and it is, I think, the approach where there are basically not so many limitations compared to all the other approaches. So there's a lot of freedom if you use EC2.
Yeah. Another thing what is quite interesting is that there are a lot of new instance types available with EC2. So AWS is doing a lot of innovation here. So you can have ARM or AMD processors that are quite more cost effective than the Intel stuff. So that's really cool what's going on there. So I think, it's also worth checking out EC2, especially if you have workloads with really, really high throughput, and then we have a lot of interesting options there.
Okay, Andreas. So I think we are done discussing the options, and I hope that this was high level enough for also people that are not into the technical details to understand what the trade-offs are with all the different options. But still, it was detailed enough to make a good decision. And I would really encourage you, so the listeners, if you have any feedback, then send us an email or send us a tweet on Twitter. So the details are all in the show notes. And so I think that's it, Andreas. Is there anything that you would like to add for this time?
No, thank you very much, Michael. This was very interesting, and thanks for coming up with this decision tree. So thanks for listening, until in 2 weeks with the next episode.
Yeah, so thank you very much, and talk to you soon. Bye.